This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. This portion of tonight's program is coming to you from Napa Valley College. And the reason that is I'm sitting here with Sonoma County's new Poet Laureate, Iris Jamal Dunkel, who teaches here now and then. Welcome, Iris. Nice to see you in Napa.
Thank you. It's so great to be here.
So just a couple of weeks ago, I gave up my laurel crown. My two-year stint as Poet Laureate of Sonoma County is up, and now it's your turn. And many congratulations to you. This is a wonderful thing.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored.
When we finish talking here, I'm going to play a recording of a reading that Iris Jamal Dunkel gave at the Word Temple Poetry Series in January of 2016. She was reading from her new book, There's a Ghost in This Machine of Air. But right now, I wanted to ask you about your Poet Laureate projects. You have a number of them. Let's deal with them one at a time, okay? So one of them is a column that is appearing in the Press Democrat, the Santa Rosa Press Democrat, and it's called Poet's Corner. Tell me how you got your foot in the door to have a column, which is wonderful, and then tell me about the first column that appeared.
You bet. It's been a dream of mine since I lived in Washington, D.C., and I used to read Book World in the Washington Post, and Bob Haas used to have a column in there called Poet's Choice. I used to read this column every single week religiously, and I always thought if I could ever write for a newspaper, I would love to write this column. So when I was offered, in the last couple of years, I've been able to establish a relationship with the Press Democrat thanks to Jack London State Historic Park, where I run a book discussion group, and they wanted us to write little descriptions of different books by Jack London as a way to draw people in to get them to these discussion groups. So I got to know one of the editors there, and she happens to enjoy poetry.
Yeah.
And I know, it's wonderful. And I pitched the idea to her about, right, you know, there's so many poems about Sonoma County or about engaging history and thinking about this place where we live. I said, well, why don't we write a column about it? And she said, all right, let's do it. So
excellent.
I started with a poem by one of Sonoma County's beloved poets, and now our California Poet Laureate, mm-hmm. Dana Gioia. It's a poem that actually originally appeared in The New Yorker, and which I love that this poem about California's burnt hills in the summer appeared in New York, in The New Yorker. Mm-hmm. But the idea of the column is to get people reading poetry on a, you know, on a daily basis. It's a lot of times, and I thought it was really great to start with Dana Gioia, who really is somebody who wants to bring poetry to everybody as well. You know, the idea that poetry lives up in this ivory tower away from everyone is not true.
Right.
And everyone right. needs poetry. I see it in my classroom every day. You know, mm-hmm. I teach students from all different walks of life, and everyone engages with good poetry.
And I think with having a column that appears in an actual newspaper, people who might assume that they don't like poetry will run across some poetry that they do like. And
exactly.
There's the mind opening. So
exactly.
It's a great project. How often will the column appear in the paper?
Right now it's set to appear twice a month. So every other Sunday in the book section, you'll see a poem and a little commentary on it. In
great.
Fact, we have a great poem coming up this Sunday. We have a poem by Catherine Hastings.
Oh, okay. And so that would be Sunday, January. I mean, excuse me, we're in February now. February 7th? I don't know.
Whatever, I believe so, yes.
Whatever Super Bowl Sunday is, because you can't get away from that. Okay, everybody, stop watching football and read my poem.
That's right. I love it.
So that's one of your projects. Another one is you plan on teaching, I think, writing poetry centered on Sonoma County history to teachers. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And how will you do that and where?
Well, the idea behind that is the workshop would take place at Sonoma County Office of Education. And the idea of teaching the teacher is a way to disseminate these lessons out to more students. I'll also be teaching on site at a few schools and teaching some poet teachers how to teach these lessons in order to get them to more students. But the idea is to start it, you know, they do teacher training all the time, and teaching poetry that teaches students to look closely at local history using objects like Charmian London's mother's whalebone corset is a possible object that we could either bring or look at the photographs of mm-hmm. for people to imagine what it was like to live a life inside of a corset, and to mm-hmm. have children write about that and have teachers write about that is really it's a form of empathetic history. It's the idea mm-hmm. of you're in it, right? You're feeling it. Mm-hmm. And it's really part of the Common Core. It's how it's part of how teachers are approaching teaching history. So mm-hmm. why not insert poetry? Because how, you know, it's such a hands-on way for a student to identify with something in that way. So,
right. Oh, that's wonderful. And then, you know, I'm going to turn to your book just for a second. You have poems in There's a Ghost in This Machine of Air that are largely centered on history in Sonoma County, specifically West Sonoma County for the most part. And, you know, what you were just talking about as far as bringing poetry to kids made me think of the Laguna de Santa Rosa. Mm. And just this morning, there's this beautiful video online that was taken at the Laguna de Santa Rosa yesterday, and it's filled with water now, and there are mm-hmm. birds everywhere and waves, and yet this laguna was a sewage.
Yes.
A sewage pond in history. So it's good that that kind of thing gets to our students also. They'll know how important it is to protect the land
exactly.
that they live on.
Well, as Gay LeVerin has said, and I'll rephrase it, everyone thinks history begins the day they step, you know, they come to a place. And that's the way a lot of us feel about Sonoma County. I mean, I did grow up here, but, you know, the history began the day I lived here mm-hmm. and it's important for us.
Oh,
to
we all agree.
Right. It's tough. But the idea is that if we learn the history, so if we learn the story of what happened to the Laguna de Santa Rosa, then we won't repeat the mistakes we've made in the past. I mean, when they decided in 1906 in, you know, the Sebastopol City Council decided, well, we've got a problem with typhoid because we have a lot of people in a small space and nowhere to put the waste. Let's mm-hmm. dig a pit over in this big lake and put it there. And then they just started putting stuff there and it just kept, that was the laguna, and they filled it with all the waste. And then it just became a tradition of waste. And it was thought of, I mean, we look at the Barlow, you know, that's a place.
The Barlow Center.
The
yeah.
Barlow is this place that I was in San Francisco the other day and there's this huge Barlow billboard, come to the Barlow experience, you know, it's in Sunset Magazine.
Oh my gosh,
it was a toxic waste dump.
And now it's very foo-foo ooh-la-la.
And now, you know.
These great little restaurants
it's amazing.
And cafes. And
yeah.
People don't know what they're eating on.
Yes. Let's hope it's all cleaned up.
It is a good place. It is all changed.
Yeah, but know? I think, you know, what's important is that, you know, we can enjoy the good life that we have now, but
yeah.
if we want to keep it, we need to remember what happened before us.
Right. Very good. Very good. So let's turn to another project. This one is very exciting to me. I know that you are planning on meeting people in historic places all around Sonoma County and leading writing workshops right at those historic places. Where are some of the places you plan on going, and how do you plan on teaching poetry writing at these places?
Well, this is something that's inspired by a project that actually we worked on several years ago at Jack London State Historic Park when it was facing closure.
Uh-huh.
And we went on a hike together.
This is when I was leading hikes to encourage people to write poems inspired by state parks, because I was producing an anthology called What Redwoods Know: Poems from California State Parks, as a benefit for the California State Parks Foundation. And this is when 70 of our state parks were faced with permanent closure. An unbelievable thought. I mean, just, So you and I at Jack London.
Yeah, so we went to Jack London State Historic Park. And for me, that's a very special place because it's where I discovered that I was a writer when I was in the sixth grade.
Oh, that's so special.
It led to a lifetime love of Jack London and the study of his work. But we went on a hike, and walking those paths together as poets and having conversations about all the different knowledge we brought to that place made us all, we sat down and wrote at the end of it and wrote amazing. All of our poems were spectacular and very interrelated.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea behind this project is it made us all feel the park and feel attached to the park in a way that maybe we hadn't before, because we had written there, we had discovered it in a way as, you know, we've discovered it as a writer. So we've looked at it so closely that we're looking underneath it and trying to relate to it. So the idea is that at places like the Laguna, at Jack London State Historic Park, at Luther Burbank Gardens or in Santa Rosa, and also the Experimental Gardens in Sebastopol, leading guided hikes with either myself or with experts, you know, who know the place, that really give us this depth of knowledge. And then I would lead everyone at the end on a writing prompt. And the idea is to generate poetry written about the historic places all around Sonoma County as a way to get us thinking about and being attached to and feeling and discovering our really, really interesting past.
That's terrific. And yeah, thank you for saying it was inspired by that project. It's good to know it's still kind of living in some way. And you're right. Sitting in those places, walking in those places, and really pondering the history of them at such a deep level in order to write a poem creates a very special connection that you wouldn't have just walking through and thinking about, you know, maybe work, right?
Yeah.
Thinking about your job as you walk down the trail. So that's fantastic. So this brings us to another part of your Poet Laureate project. I do think you're going to need 10 years, not two. So the next thing is you plan on publishing an anthology of poems based on the poems written at these workshops you'll hold at historic sites. So talk to us about that for a minute.
Sure. And it does also, the idea is to create an anthology of all of the writing that's generated through these projects. So the idea is that if someone is in a classroom where they're teaching a lesson, their teacher's teaching a lesson based on, you know, Charmian London's mother's whalebone corset, or if somebody is walking at Luther Burbank's Experimental Garden and writes, you know, a poem about the mother tree where all the grafts took place, both those poems would be considered for the anthology at the end that would bring all these poems together and celebrate the poetry of Sonoma County and the poetry that preserves the history of Sonoma County. And then, of course, if you put together an anthology, you have to celebrate it.
Right,
so we would definitely celebrate it at the end of my tenure as Poet Laureate. And we'd have a big party at the Center for the Arts, Festival Center for the Arts, and have different participants read their poems aloud to an audience. And my goal in that project is to get as many people as possible from all different ages, from all different backgrounds, that really represent the place where we're living, reading their poetry and writing poetry. And hopefully by seeing it in the paper, by participating in workshops in their school classroom, or by going on a hike, you know, there's no age limits. There's no parameters around this. I want everyone to feel comfortable being a part of these projects, because I want poetry to reach as many people as possible in this county.
And I think you have a really good chance of doing this because of the part of your project where you're bringing teachers together and teaching them, you know, what to do in the classrooms as far as teaching poetry is concerned. When I was poet laureate, one of my projects was an anthology called Digging Our Poetic Roots, Poems from Sonoma County. And I tried very hard to get a, you know, a wide range of ages involved. Mm-hmm. And not just, you know, the kind of the white older person in Sonoma County, to be quite blunt. And I even went to a Latino radio station. I did lots of things to try to get poems from everywhere. And it really didn't work.
Yeah.
It didn't work. So I didn't have that connection with the teachers that you're going to have. And I think that will help a great deal in bringing different cultures and ages into your anthology. So I'm very excited about it.
Well, I hope so. And I do plan on calling upon the power of California poets in the schools as well.
Yeah,
I'm hoping that
I did.
Yeah, hopefully it'll all come together. Yeah. Wish me luck.
I think it will. Well, I would encourage you to, you know, hold readings or have other people hold readings, you know, in throughout Sonoma County, because we did have a very good audience at the Cloverdale Performing Arts Center. You know, we just went around and did that, and it was great fun.
That's a great idea.
So, are there other projects? Have I missed anything?
No, that's it.
Is that all you're going to be
doing?
That's
all I'm doing. All that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I am going to play your reading from the Word Temple Poetry Series you read with Jane Mead. But before I do that, I thought I'd grab your book, and maybe you could read just one or two poems that you did not read at that reading.
I would love to.
Let's do that.
Okay, I'll read a couple of poems. This one is one that imagines what it's like for the, and a lot of this book focuses on the Gravenstein apple industry, the early beginnings of it. And what I had started to think about is, you know, it was long hours when you were putting in an orchard and tending an orchard, but what was it like for the women who were doing that? Because their day did not end when they finished their work in the field. So this poem is about a quote that I found in one of the, in the research I was doing. And it's actually named after the quote. And it says, "When I die, if I go to a place where there are apples, I'll know it won't be heaven." "After the tractor cooled and dust settled, come into house gone cold, stoke fire's coals, peel and slice the windfall's thin brown sugar, a lemon plucked yesterday from the bough. Roll dough cold, cover, bake an hour, gather the children, coax, read words or written, stir pot hot on iron stove, wash the earth from crooked carrots and beets, slice thin into cast iron skillet, stir and fry with yesterday's slaughtered chicken, wash the young faces, scold the ones who know better, divvy chores, set, serve, eat, clear, wash, scour, hot, steam, boiled, lay the children down, look for quiet enough, sit beside the glowing coals, song pouring back into the fire what's burned out." And the other poem I wanted to read is about a town I live right near called Freestone. Mm-hmm. And Freestone has a fascinating history. And this is built upon the stories of its history. Freestone. Hope is a town quarried from easily worked sandstone. First, a general store built on button candy and dry goods. Then, the black velvet air of the saloon that gathers the workmen like a hive. When the architect built the two-story hotel, those men began to leave their canvas tents and settle down. This is before the train drew a silver line between product and deliveries made possible by the Sausalito ferry. Years before, when the frog chorus still swelled from Salmon Creek, General Vallejo gave the land to three men who were named James. So, together they built a sawmill on the creek's stony jaw. Soon they became three men gone drunk on the wealth of land and what more they could dredge out of it. Became red-faced, chest-to-chest, spit and hot sparks shaving the dark, until one man, call him James, decided to saw the mill in two, revealing what was underneath. Frog songs on top of sweet water, on top of a rich bedrock that would build the town.
Thank you so much. We were just talking before we were recording about how these are narrative poems, and that is kind of a new direction for you. Before this book, you won the Trio Award and had a book published called Gold Passage from Trio House Press. How would you say those poems are different than the poems in your newest book?
Well, they're definitely more lyric poems, but many of them still engage with history. But this book of poems was built as a project. It started with a poem a day project where I kept reading about the history of Sonoma County and digging into it. And every day I would have a new poem that would emerge. And so this poem was written quickly as a narrative sequence, versus the other one was written over 10 years. So,
oh my goodness.
There's
a difference right there, 10 years.
Yeah, it's very different.
Well, before we sign off, I want to circle back for just a minute, because we were talking about Jack London State Historic Park, where you lead a reading group. And, you know, ever since I've known you, I've known that you've had this really deep connection to Jack London. If you say Iris Jamal Dunkel, you almost have to say Jack London somewhere in the same sentence. Where did this come from for you?
Well, it happened in sixth grade. I went on a field trip with my school at Apple Blossom. We went on a field trip to Jack London State Historic Park. And up until this point, I had already been a writer. I did not pay attention in school. All I did was write stories. And God bless my teachers for letting me do that. And I went on this trip, but I just thought I was a strange bird until I went to Jack London State Historic Park and saw that you could live a life as a writer. And seeing Jack London's notes pinned up on the clothesline above his sleeping porch, seeing the wolf house that he built and never got to move into. These monuments really opened up this world to me, and I left that park and voraciously read every single thing that Jack London wrote, which was a lot.
Yeah.
It took the rest of my childhood. And I began a lifelong study of Jack London. So I also am a Jack London scholar, but I approach it differently than most scholars because I am also a writer. And I find that it brings a new perspective to how you look at his work.
Right. Well, Iris, thank you so much. It's been a real joy, and I look forward to all of these Poet Laureate projects blossoming around us. And thanks very much.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
This is Catherine Hastings, and we're going to move on now to the recording of Iris reading at the Word Temple Poetry Series in January of 2016. As I mentioned, Iris Jamal Dunkel is Sonoma County's new Poet Laureate. This is something we are very happy about. Let's give her a round of applause. And while I want to make note of the special celebration of this great news that will take place right here in this room on Sunday, January 31st at 3 p.m., please mark it on your calendar. This is when we have the Poet Laureate reception for her. Tonight, we are celebrating her new collection, There's a Ghost in This Machine of Air, poems centered right here in Sonoma County, which, like the rest of the planet, has faced a continuous cycle of creation and destruction, and hopefully recreation. From the Pomo cultivating sedge for the creation of baskets, to a prince in Denmark eating Gravenstein apples, to one of our newest public open spaces, the former cesspool called the Laguna de Santa Rosa, Iris leads us through vanishing orchards, sinking boats, and more. Sometimes her retelling of history occurs by way of prose poems, sometimes via another kind of verse. Sometimes the stories are told in her own voice, sometimes they're told in the voice of an early settler. It is clear that Iris listened to each poem and decided which was the way it wanted to be told. Often it wanted to be told with imagery, a silver line drawn by a train, the pink confetti of apple blossoms, the ache of a wooden house. Can you hear it? As Sonoma Countyans, you'll be drawn to the titles. The naming of Sebastopol in mud time. After the 1915 Gravenstein apple show. Planting Gold Ridge, mid-1800s, and more. Then you'll be pulled through each poem by the green hooks of the natural world or the demons of change. I'm so happy to introduce Iris and these poems of place, our place, to you. So please welcome Iris Jamal Dunkel.
Thank you so much, Catherine. That was such a lovely introduction, and it's so lovely to read with you, Jody and Jane. Such a pleasure. I am so excited to read from my new collection. It's finally out, and to launch it here in Sebastopol is so important to me and so meaningful. I grew up in Sebastopol, and from the time I was about, 5, 6 years old, I decided I wanted to write about Sebastopol, and so it's kind of amazing to get the chance to have finally done that. I'm going to start with one of the first poems of the book, and it takes place talking about the mural in our post office. Anyone ever been into the post office here in Sebastopol? Well, there's a lovely painting done by Millett Dean. It was done in 1937 as part of the Works Project. I'm going to make sure we got Millett a shout out for that painting. But I've been looking at it for a long time. Every time I've mailed off my poems and received my rejections and mailed off my poems and received my rejections. But it's a place where it has a picture of what the ideal Sebastopol farm looks like. Dear Sebastopol, hard not to get dizzy here under the tides of scents, how they grade and terrace the air, salt thick tang of wet earth, fat with limestone against sweet rot of windfalls. Pine sap town built on stolen ground, wagon rutted streets, hills once lush with redwood and oak, cleared to the root for acres of orchards. Century-wide bursts of scrub oaks smoldering in the Laguna de Santa Rosa. A train that carried its screaming weight down Main Street for nearly 100 years. But the WPA mural on the post office wall still frames the hard-won promise. Neat rows of apple trees flanked by white chicken coops. Once your accepted story swallowed me under its bell glass sky. Now I wake slowly, learn to waver in the air above what history we've learned, sense what's pushing up underneath. The book is pretty chronological. It starts in the early history, but it goes back and forth. But this poem is about the origins of the Gravenstein apple, which I grew up on an old apple orchard, and I grew up eating a lot of Gravenstein apples. In fact, in this very building, I grew up getting, after the Gravenstein apple, the parade every year, getting my crisp over there on that side. But my mom makes the best apple crisp, just so you know. She's in the audience, just so you know, too.
You're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. Let's return now to Sonoma County Poet Laureate Iris Jamal Dunkel reading at the Word Temple Poetry Series in January of 2016.
It's called Sweet Bitter. 1. In the 1700s, Prince Carl of Denmark eats Gravenstein apples while visiting the dappled shade of an orchard in Italy. Its rigid trunk offered the cuttings of an idea that would take to graft at his summer home, a white castle on the blue lip of the Baltic Sea. Seeds planted, then tended, until great orchards bloomed across the flat, low lands where the sea seeps in slowly, where salt, like history, lingers on the air. Tart sweetness bulging from a red-barred orb. 2. By the time the orchards grew into vast bounding fields, the Germanic spoken legends of the North Sea were receding like the tide, as were the resources. Entire islands of stories were swallowed whole in a storm. 3. For a century, gardeners cut and grafted the bone-barred heart of the fruit to perfection, until it tasted bittersweet enough, until it kept long enough to travel long distances. Then the seeds and cuttings were slipped into the trunks of steamship passengers, tiny seedlings kept moist across the long passages, until the Gravenstein seedling was carefully unwrapped from its moist burlap coverings to be planted here in Sevastopol on freshly clear-cut hills that rolled to the sea. 4. In the 1850s, those who didn't find gold farmed. Orchards covered the bare hills as fast as they were cleared of scrub oak and pine and miwok. And the years seeped in, the horticulturalists grafting to win a longer market, a higher yield. But what the apple bore was memory, a long-traveled, bittersweet taste that can't be bred out or baked out or forgotten. Red lines that bind the fruit to the hands that pick, to the stories that still whisper on the low roll of a long-traveled sea where salt, like history, lingers on the air. So the next poem is where the title comes from. A lot of people ask about this title. It comes from this poem, and this poem is about, it's not set in Sevastopol, it's set in Khatati, and it's about the first white settler in Khatati. His name was John Thomas Reed, and he settled in 1827, and it didn't go well, so this is the story. There's a ghost in this machine of air. Salvation can be found before light comes, when the dawn chorus tightens the fogged air. Then sun rises to reveal the massive green hills rolling back to the sea. The Irish immigrant who first tried to settle Khatate built a rough-planed cabin on Crane Creek and planted wheat. After a season passed, he was surprised in the middle of the night by the ones whose land he had stolen. Dozens of young coast Miwok men running bare-chested down the sloped flanks of the fog-wet hills, their arms extended into fiery wings, their hands clutching 3 feet of burning tule that hissed and popped from their arms. Can't you see them now? Fiery birds ghosting this machine of air. The settler would escape, but his cabin and wheat fields would be burned to the ground. He would never return to the rolling green hills, to the dawn chorus that had hypnotized him, because after that night, He understood why one might run arms aflame to save this. So the amazing cover that you see here, I'm so grateful for this cover art. It's actually done by someone who appears in the book. It's called Oaken Stream, and you can actually see it if you go to the Bodega Heritage Gallery in Bodega, and they gratefully lent me permission to use it. It's by Grace Myrtle Griffith, who was the daughter of Nathaniel Griffith, who was the father of the Gravenstein apple. He also had two other daughters. Another, Nell Griffith Wilson, was actually a really important poet who was very good friends with Charmian London. And anyone who knows me well knows I spent a lot of time writing a biography of Charmian London with Susan, who's in the audience right now. So it's so amazing when those things come together. And the third daughter was a horticulturist, and she worked with Luther Burbank. So this poem, The Accidental Pool, and by the way, this is of the Laguna, circa 1929. The Accidental Pool, the poem I'm going to be reading, refers to those two Nathaniel Griffith, the father of the Gravenstein apple, and his three daughters. The Accidental Pool. Nathaniel Griffith brought Luther Burbank to his orchard on the flat marshland of the Laguna. From his home, the trees spelled across a wide expanse in straight rows. Already, they were good servants, yielding a ton of fruit each. But the season was short. Burbank had ideas for winter fruits, the winterstein still bittersweet tasting, but with tougher skin to withstand the frost. The three girls could see the men on the porch as they sat in the skirt of soft grass surrounding the willow. Spring had covered the grass between rows of apple trees in yellow mustard. They made a game of following the strokes of color, the low freckle of mustard, the high powdery acacia, to the solitary exclamations of yellow iris crowning the front yard. Years later, after Burbank's experimental trees had failed, after their father had died, and the green wooden farmhouse had burned to the ground, they would remember this inventory. How that day, the golden lines had burned in them a tether to this land, and each day after, they would try to pull themselves back. The next poem is from this. There's a whole sequence in the middle of the book about the Laguna. And it's important to tell you that this project came from a walk. When I was invited to go on a walk at the Laguna, I was invited to walk there, and I thought, why would I walk at the Laguna? It smells like sewer. That sounds terrible. Because I grew up here, and when growing up here, that's how you knew the Laguna. It was a place that was where the garbage was put. So it really fascinated me that all these people that were walking the paths didn't know that history, and so it really drove this project in a big way. I'm going to start with the prelude, which is the opening poem of the sequence, and then I'm going to talk about the sewer. Prelude. Begin by walking the cracked chamomile paths. Let the paths stretch across a wide stubbed field. Fill the air with the sound of birds. Fill the air with fat bees and the machine hum of insects. Post appropriate markers that mark miles, but not the whole truth. Try to contain the fissures of time in each quick step. When you walk under the lone oak that constellates the field like the last visible star, smell smoke. See the ghosts of hundreds of other thick oak trunks that once crowded this space. Hear their lost leaves whispering. When you reach the man-made lake constructed to replace the natural lake, walk the perimeter. observe the cattails that cage the floating bodies of seven pelicans that have stopped here to rest en route back to the sea. Look out across the drought-dry field and imagine a chain of hundreds of lakes linking their way back to the sea. Drain them for the good soil underneath. Fill them with soot. Fill them again with feces and urine. Cover what's left of them in brambles. Get tangled in the sticky blood of berry juice. And when you near the last of the water, the floating pontoon bridge, and the sounds of children playing baseball in the dirt on a chalk diamond, let a red snake T-bone the trail. Let it open in you a wound that at its center is a mouth. So this is the history of the sewer. Laguna of Sevastopol sewer, beginning in 1906. As the town grew, so did the waste. Buildings still sticky with pine sap were built in a day. Hope packed incoming train cars from San Francisco. Soon Sevastopol became known not only for its soil and plentiful game, but also for its smell. Raw sewage-filled street culverts and drip from gutters until sickness descended. City officials were pressured to find a quick solution, and so giant cesspools were dug out and filled with all the waste Sevastopol had to offer. Urine, feces, apple skins and cores, animal remnants from the tannery, peach skins and pits, rusted cans and broken bottles, even the giant skeletons of cars. All piled up, formed a dam between what was waste and what was not. Time circling the laguna in the body of a white egret, waiting for a chance to land. So the last poem, the one wonderful thing that I want to say is the laguna is a story of hope. It's come back because of all the hard work of the people in this area, the Laguna Foundation, who I want to thank for fact-checking my book for me, because a poet's view of history and the biology of the Laguna is very different from the reality. So I'm grateful for their alterations. But it's coming back, and it's a reclaimed place because of all this hard work. So the last poem from the sequence is called Impaired. Which system is miraculous? The plentiful before the rescue of what's left after? This 14-mile wetland, this 254-square-mile watershed that's spread between four cities where history's leftover sediments are still being removed. By 1990, 92% of the laguna's riparian forest was gone. Left arm reaching into Copeland, Washoe, and Blucher Creeks. Right arm reaching into Santa Rosa, Hinnabaugh, and Five Creeks, a mouth that breathes into Mark West Springs Creek, a backbone made of the Mayacamas and Sonoma Mountains. In summer months, the laguna becomes a silver ribbon of water that threads. In winter, she loses boundaries, becoming again the series of lakes that led to the sea. Listed as impaired under the Federal Clean Water Act for sediment, nitrogen, temperature, phosphorus, mercury, and dissolved oxygen. When you walk the smooth graded paths, or the dirt paths that line the fields, or the tree-dappled paths, remember the miraculous ghost of what was once there. I'm going to read two more poems. The next is my little love poem to Sonoma County. Has anyone ever heard of fox before? I know there's a song. What does the song say? What does a fox say or something? It's a really silly like disco song, or not disco. I don't know, techno song, right? So you can actually a fox is very loud and very. You know it's a fox. They scream bloody murder. And it's only when they're mating. And so if there's a fox on your hill that is going through this period, you will know. And so we had a fox on our hill. We had a fox on our hill that screamed every night for many, many nights. So of course the fox appeared in my poem. Sonoma County. At eye level, the field is pillows. Dew-weighted grass, rich with the scent of wet earth. The soil here hums. Electric. Since 1920, Sonoma County has been in the top 10 for agricultural production. There was so much open land on which to plant crops of hops and grapes, prunes, and apples. Already the apple trees stand their hills, clad in green gowns, and vineyards hold back the earth in the maze of their branches. At night, the air is fresh and alive with all that desire. A fox screams her needs night after night as we wish for sleep to bring us back to the time before when life throbbed and thrived. The last poem is, there's a reference to the word, the Uncanny Valley. Has anyone ever heard of that reference? So the Uncanny Valley is, it has to do with robotics. So when you look at a robot and it looks just like, when humans look at a robot and they look just like themselves, they don't believe it's real. But it can be the same exact robot, but if it has a too human of a face, we don't believe it. But if it has a face that's very robotic looking, we think, oh yeah, that's a that works. That's a robot. It just can't look like us. So of course, as a poet, I love that term. So this poem is called Home is an Uncanny Valley. If the rain continues, then we may lose our escape down the gravel-throated drive. We are hungry for the rain. If the rain edits the earth of the fields, if the rain rewrites the soapstone creek bed, if the ditches we dug into the earth just yesterday overflow, then the path back to ourselves could be blurred by the many rainstorms before 1987, 1992, 2005. Each flood spilling into the next like a series of connected lakes. The child looking out of the rain-freckled window could be ourselves. We are hungry for the rain. We are hungry for the truth. The reservoirs are low, exposing what we'd forgotten. Old logs, rusted cars, a body or two. If we flood again, then we could forget the hunger. Then we could forget what's underneath, exposed. If home is an uncanny valley and we walk toward it, see that it is too much like ourselves to believe, then the fields, the creek beds, the gravel-throated drive will scream muddy loud. The child looking out of the rain-freckled window could be ourselves. We are hungry for the rain. We are hungry for the truth. Let home equal knoll washed new, a place built upon a place. Let memory fade like a fog. Let the child at the window be my child, not myself. Let the water find its path back. Let the rain spell out a truth on the tin roof above our sleeping heads. Let that path out open like a mouth. Thank you very much.
This is Catherine Hastings. You've been listening to Iris Jamal Dunkel, Sonoma County Poet Laureate, reading at the Word Temple Poetry Series in January of 2016. While I'm speaking dates, pull out your calendar because I want to remind you that on Saturday, March 26th at 7 p.m., at the Word Temple Poetry Series, we will have a special celebration with Dana Gioia, the new California State Poet Laureate. This will take place at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts, Saturday, March 26th at 7 p.m. The address is 282 South High Street in Sebastopol. You can get more information by going to wordtemple.com. I hope to see you all there. We will have wine and possibly some cake and cookies, so come on over. I turn now to some sad news. On January 15th, 2016, California and the world lost a beautiful man and a wonderful poet. Francisco X. Alarcón died of stomach cancer, and his loss has left the community of poets and dancers and more with broken hearts. Francisco came to Sonoma County many times. He read at my Word Temple poetry series twice. He read at the Sonoma County Book Festival, and he read from the anthology I published when our state parks were facing permanent closure due to budget constraints, What Redwoods Know, Poems from California State Parks. I've met so many poets over the years, as you can imagine. Francisco, I can honestly say, was one of my favorites. Not just Francisco the poet, but Francisco the big-hearted, high-energy, gentle, sweet soul. Those of you who attended his readings knew that he always started them by having the audience stand up and face the four directions, leading you in incantations. It was uplifting and joined all of us together as family on this planet. Francisco had more than 20 books published that included sonnets, free verse, haiku, and children's poetry. And I think that he felt the children's poetry was his most important work. He was bilingual in English and Spanish and translated his own poems. He also spoke French and Portuguese and, most remarkably, Nahuatl, the indigenous Mexican language of some of his ancestors. Although Francisco was not able to attend college right out of high school due to finances, he came back to California at age 17, working as a migrant laborer and a metal parts manufacturing firm. He attended Stanford University. During his graduate days there, he was questioned and held briefly in connection with the murder of a 15-year-old in Golden Gate Park. It didn't matter that the charges were absolutely preposterous. Another man soon confessed to the killing, and Francisco was cleared of any involvement. As a result, he sued the city for having falsely linked him to the crime. You will find connections to this event in some of his poetry. Francisco was an activist. Much of his work addressed important issues of our time, such as immigration and outsider identity. He was a gay Latino man who was raised in a strict Catholic family. Sadly, he was closeted into late adulthood, never coming out to his family, although his sister said, quote, "We all knew." I had the pleasure of spending time with Francisco and his longtime partner, Javier Pinzon, an equally gentle soul. Sonoma County poets send him our love. Francisco and Javier were together over 20 years and married during the legal window for gay marriage in California in 2008. Francisco taught at UC Santa Cruz and in the Spanish department at UC Davis. In honor of Francisco and his family, I'd like to read two of his poems. Due to time constraints, I will read them only in English. I'm happy that these are his own translations. I'm going to start with the opening poem in What Redwoods Know, Poems from California State Parks, and then read a poem from his book, Sonnets to Madness and Other Misfortunes, Poems. Trees are poets. Sacramento, Califas. Around here, trees are poets. In fall, they turn heavy-hearted. Sad, they change colors. Acting up, they let go their leaves. For months, they seem to cry, "We're dead cold." Someday, they awake oblivious and start coming up with green verses once again. Sonnet 19. I come to your doors, Mission Dolores, to touch your adobes with my hands, made of the tears, the sweat, the forced labor of 1,000 natives. The whiteness of your walls shelter the bones shattered by your cross. How many stillborns did you christen? How many mothers fell at your feet? Others arrived and beside you constructed wooden buildings, apartments for rent, and so your barrio grew and your roof fastened with leather withstood tremors. The natives, naive, called you home. Finally, I'm going to read the message that Francisco recorded for us the day before he died. I won't be able to read the whole thing, but this is the vast majority of it. Recorded on January 14th, 2016. I want to invoke the unifying force of the universe that in the Mesoamerican tradition is called Teotl. Teotl means unity, the divine unity that is made up of two forces, the female divinity and male divinity. And together we greet the four directions as we have done in the past. To the north, Tahui. To the east, Tahui. To the south, Tahui. And to the west, Tahui. As we invoke each of these four directions, we remember love, charity, and hope that are all universal. Because in the end, the truth does not only belong to one pueblo, it belongs to all. All human beings share the same aspirations and hopes. They aspire for the divine. They aspire to transcend. They aspire to have a place in the universe that can be everlasting. I have had the privilege of learning about the Mesoamerican tradition in a very profound way. The day when human beings can truly feel and appreciate and in some way value that tradition that has been oppressed for over 500 years, and that we, the Mesoamericans, continue it in our hearts as something real, as something that belongs to us. That is why it is so important for me that at the end of the day, it's charity and hope, faith and humanity that is able to sweep away these borders, these barriers, these obstacles that separate us from one another, that make some think they are greater than others. Even Pope John the 23rd already believed in this, and now I think that Francisco I has been able to be true to this tradition. I want everyone here, united in one spirit, to do our own invocations, feeling them as our own, feeling them as we are one in this great calling, the calling of one human being to another, from one human to his own weakness, so that he or she may listen, so that he, in any given moment, the inner weakness is moved and is able to proclaim this petition. Let us convoke the last Tahui, beginning in the direction of the west, Tahui, Tahui, and then to the direction of the south, Tahui, Tahui, and then to the direction of the east, Tahui, Tahui, and finally to the direction of the north, Tahui, Tahui, so that we do not feel like foreigners in our own land. This is our tradition. This is what belongs to us. This is our weakness. Tahui, 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 that represent the sun, the earth, the wind, and the fire. May peace be always with you. May the sun always shine within you. Thank you, Francisco X. Alarcón. Another poet was lost early this year, C.D. Wright, and I'll have a short tribute to her on my program next month. I hope you enjoyed tonight's program. If you have any questions or comments, please get in touch with me at khastings@wordtemple.com. I hope to see you all Saturday, March 26th at the celebration with Dana Gioia, our new California State Poet Laureate. Thanks for listening.